Is everyone situated? Then I would like to call this committee of the whole meeting to order for October 3rd, 2017. May I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Davis.
Here.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Here.
Mrs. Hickey.
Here.
Mr. Martyri.
Here.
Mr. Moore.
Here.
Dr. Thompson.
Here.
Ms. Williams.
All right. So always our first order of business is to recognize visitors and invite comments from the public. I note that we have two public comments this evening. And Diane, we can start with you. You stand up, name, address, 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Diane Carroll. I live at 720 Forest Avenue. It's been about a year since I've been here. And I'm kind of singing the same old tune, but I think it's something that should be taken into consideration. I don't know a lot about the Willard proposed additional classroom, but I know that there's a space deficiency, and I think that any consideration for more classroom space at Willard or Lincoln should take into consideration future needs. While I realize this topic is to address immediate needs, this is the perfect time to think about new classroom space to accommodate full-day kindergarten in the district. I think the recent addition at Lincoln was a missed opportunity to make full-day kindergarten a reality. I think it is just a matter of when, not if, full-day kindergarten will come to River Forest. Parents want it, teachers want it, and it is the norm in our country. I'm not going to rehash the whole full-day kindergarten arguments by myself here. This request is simply about the space and what you're considering tonight, or at least part of what you're considering tonight, from what I gather. And I know the cost of additional full-time employees also factors into the full-day kindergarten scenario. But if we don't take advantage of planning for the future now, it will cost more when the time does come. So when and if you build on, please plan for a future in the district 90 that brings full-day kindergarten to our children.
Thank you.
Thanks. And under 3 minutes, very pithily done. Now the second person signed up, it's a name I don't recognize. Pat Mayer? Pat Meyer.
Hi everybody, Pat Meyer. My address is 26481 Longview Drive in Conifer, Colorado, which is...
Can you give us a former address? That'd be easier to write down.
Nah, that's what you got. Okay. 734 Keystone Avenue. I'm in town for a couple of days, and I learned about tonight's meeting, and I thought I'd come by and say hi. And I was in the neighborhood because the main reason I'm in town is I had an overdue book at the library, and I was going to drop it off at the library, and I saw that now there's drive-through Dropbox, so I want to congratulate you on that. That looks absolutely terrific. But more seriously, so we moved away a little over a year ago, and I think most of you know my daughter Sammy, and when we moved, she started eighth grade out in Colorado, and she's now a freshman in high school. And sometimes some distance helps you see things that you may not necessarily see when you're living in River Forest day to day and involved with schools day to day. The school that she went to last year for middle school is a very good school, very highly rated in Colorado. Doesn't hold a candle to Roosevelt. It absolutely does not. And I don't know that I always appreciated our schools here as much as I should have. But now I've got something to kind of compare it to, because my daughter Sammy and all her older siblings also went to school here. And we kept thinking, yeah, it's a good school, but until you see kind of the other side, you don't realize just how terrific it is. And I just wanted to thank everybody for their board service. And a couple of you I haven't even met yet, but hi, I'll maybe say hi a little bit later. And that's all I have to say. Thanks. Good to see you all.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you. And for anyone who doesn't realize it, he's the best president this board ever had. I can say that without fear of contradiction occupying my current title. All right, the next thing is we need to approve the agenda for today's meeting. May I get a motion to approve?
Second.
Excellent.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Dr. Thompson.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Mr. Martyri.
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
All right, Ed, that brings you up.
Yes, and I'm actually honored to be up, and I think this is a really nice opportunity to recognize our current board president. Kind of a privilege to have both our past and current in the room at the same time. As our Board of Ed is very aware, as a member of the Illinois Association of School Boards, District 90 gets gets a lot of value and is honored, really, to participate in some of the training opportunities that are provided for school board members across the state of Illinois. The Illinois Association of School Boards is known for their very high-quality training. And in fairness, looking around the room, knowing the many people here that have participated in one degree or another, it's rigor. The trainings that they provide are relatively lengthy and in detail. And so when we have board members that participate in training to any degree, we're certainly grateful, and it shows certainly a high level of dedication to their work. But there are those individuals who elect to kind of take their higher level training on to the next level and become master board members. And the Illinois Association of School Boards recognizes these individuals who have pursued this much more rigorous amount of training with a very well-deserved recognition. And so tonight, I'm honored in association with the Board of Ed and on behalf of the Illinois Association of School Boards to recognize our board president, Ralph Martiri, for his accomplishment of master board member status. This represents a significant contribution of time and high level of learning. And on behalf of the board, I know they're also very grateful for your representing Living Forest District 90 and many of the IASB events that you attend and the leadership that you provide there as well. So we have this to present, and I'd like to ask that our vice president, Rich Moore, please present it to him. We'd like a quick photo op if we could. And we can take it out of the box. Yes, that's the Ed Conant
and
wrapping
we
job.
Gave him a little cardboard box.
There we go.
Let's
put your right hand in here.
We had a jewel bag earlier. recyclable. So.
I'm going to take it out of the wrapper. No.
You can just buy that as your next son.
Thank you. There's a little potion in here.
Very nice.
Way to go. Congratulations.
One more.
Thank you for everything that went into that.
Yeah, well, thanks. And we've made a commitment at this board to all pursue additional professional development. I look forward to seeing this award handed out to each of my peers on this board before the end of the next year. So fantastic. We're going to move forward on that. We're going to jump now to the Education Committee report from Dr. Thompson.
Okay. So we have a presentation about the Power Scholars Academy. It's a collaboration between D90, D91, and the YMCA. And it kind of, the goal of it is to enrich, kind of support students over the summer that may need a little extra bridge to kind of maintain the knowledge that they learned in the previous year and kind of just support them and kind of push them as far as possible. It's a program that's about, I think it's 5 or 6 weeks, and you're going to go into that a little bit more. And it's from, it goes up to incoming fifth graders. And so we're going to have a presentation, just more of the details about that and that collaboration.
Thank you, Dr. Thompson. Mm-hmm. So it is an honor to welcome, in a few moments he'll be bringing greetings, but to welcome Philip Jimenez, the Executive Director of the West Cook YMCA, who has been a tremendous inspiration as District 90, and you'll see this evening District 91, Forest Park, has started to explore the possibility of the Power Scholars Academy for students in our communities. As Dr. Thompson shared, this is kind of a first ever exploration for District 90 in working with a significant community partner, external partner, in trying to move the needle for student performance. Our Board of Ed, of course, has a number of priorities in trying to ensure that students are achieving and learning at high levels. And this Board of Education has specifically identified equity, the student achievement gap, building community, and ensuring that traditionally disenfranchised learners' needs are met. And all of those things, with the addition of the opportunity to work with an external community partner on developing some shared programming, which is one of the board's goals for this coming year from the strategic plan, presents this great opportunity. So what we'd like to do is, of course, the board has some background material in their packets, but what we'd like to do to kind of bring some pizzazz to our comments tonight is start with a brief Vimeo And if my computer is cooperating, it won't take long to bring this up. A Vimeo, yes. So this is the Power Scholars Academy video from YNN.
So in terms of our priority in the YMCA for youth development, this just comes together to really, again, help those children get out of the situation in some cases they're in, improve their scores in school, graduate from high school, and go on to further training and successful lives.
Rather than face the regression that occurs in some scholars over the summer, we're closing that gap. And we're very thankful for that.
Power Scholars they're nice, and they help you with your education, and they want you to succeed in life. They don't want you to be high instead of on the low.
I am a scholar.
I am the future.
I am intelligent. I am unique. When the time comes, I will be a leader.
When there is injustice, I will take a stand.
I will be ambitious.
Because I am and always will be a power scholar.
An educated leader for life.
So there are elements to the program that obviously we'd like to talk about in much, much more detail. Again, this is a partnership with the YMCA. And very generously grant supported through the YMCA and Forest Park District 91.
What's the size of the grant?
Total amount of the grant?
So total amount of the grant is about $50,000.
So the lion's share of participants will actually be the majority from Forest Park. about two-thirds to three-quarters of the students attending. And students will qualify based upon criteria that will be monitored by our school principals. Criteria may be similar or a little bit different in Forest Park and here in River Forest, but it will be based upon achievement. And largely, we're anticipating will likely be some students that have tier two, or receiving tier two interventions in our MTSS, the systems of support. But it is intended, as was mentioned, to be a comprehensive program. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the specific details, but first and foremost, you're probably asking the question, well, why is this possibly a good fit with our goals in District 90, and why would a program like this likely be so successful with an outside entity like the YMCA? And that's why we're so grateful to have Philip here tonight. He's going to talk a little bit about the goals, the missions of the West Coast YMCA, how they're aligned with District 90's goals, and how we think this program could be a real accelerant for some of our students who are on the cusp right now of greatness. So, Philip, welcome.
Thanks. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate that. I'm going to read these remarks, because I actually thought about that, and I want to be precise about that. But before I start with my opening remarks, I realized as I was walking up that I actually went to summer school here. So I grew up a few blocks from here. RY is my home Y. I went to summer camp when I was a little one. And I think the thing that I'm most taken back by in recent years as I've been a part of the Y movement is what it feels like to come home and make a difference and an impact in the community that made you who you are. I really was not prepared for that sort of sense of, pride, I think, is what I would say. To be able to be a part of a collective group of effort between all of the efforts that are happening in Oak Park and River Forest and Forest Park and all of that. So just thought I'd throw that out there. I want to thank you all for your time, most importantly. And thank you for the focus and unwavering commitment to excellence, because you've been rewarded for that. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. But second, I want to share how much I've appreciated working with Superintendent Ed Condon and his integrity, his compassionate leadership, and his thoughtful approach to almost every engagement that he's involved with. It has been a true pleasure walking this road and this path with Ed, and it's been almost more than 2 years when we first sat down for breakfast in May of 2015 and started to explore this discussion. So just delighted to be here and at the cusp of this new potential partnership. So my remarks will focus primarily on three things. Kind of our Y's journey, what gets us to this point, because you probably think, wait, the Y's a swimming gym. What are you doing with Achievement Gap program, right? Second thing I'm going to talk about is how are two over century-old institutions, 115 years, 167-year institutions intersect, right? And then I'm going to share some values around social equity and how we want to bring social equity to our communities. And what does that mean for the Y? And I think there's some resonance there between what you're doing here at District 90. So about 115 years ago, the Y established its Oak Park Y, now known as West Cook YMCA. And in most recent history, we moved in, our team moved in 2014, and we realized that a lot of our programs lacked what I call nutritional value. There wasn't a lot of evidence-based programming, it was more glorified babysitting, and we really felt we really needed to ratchet up what our programs were offering our students, our families, and ultimately our community. So what you'll see in this particular program is our entry into evidence-based achievement gap closing program. This is a learning loss program that has been tested throughout the United States at over 40 different Y's nationally. And there's a nice set of collective data that we can kind of draw upon that how effective this is. And it's a partnership, as mentioned earlier in the video, between Bell Foundation and the YMCA. We get to bring this to local school districts, okay? I think we also realize that in order to reposition our Y well for what the community's most pressing needs were going to be, we needed to think about it in a variety of different spaces, right? First, our staff. How are we going to retool our staff to be equipped to deal with these more critical issues that we're dealing with? The program, the actual design, evidence-based, the intentionality around the programs, how are they going to be meeting our target audience, particular needs and things of that nature. We also knew we needed strong collaborations and partnerships. And what does that mean for us? And what does it mean for us to be a good partner? And what do we look at when we look at a good partner? So those considerations and discussions. We also knew that our why is landlocked. We also knew we needed space, which is the conversation that everyone is having around Oak Park River Forest. Space, 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 right? I'll say this on the record. It's my impression that we have plenty of space. It's the creative collaboration and utilization of that space that I think we lack here in our shared communities. Because if you really take an inventory of all the shared spaces we have, if we found a way to better utilize that space, I think we might be fascinated by how much capacity we actually can have. So that kind of talks a little bit about how our partnerships are intersecting in terms of values. I'll talk a little bit about our shared values. And I took the liberty of looking at your vision, your mission statement, how you plan to fulfill your mission statement, and the fundamental elements of your mission. And I'm just going to pull out two or three words in each one of those things. Love of learning. Unwavering commitment to the whole child. Creating an environment that takes a lot of intentionality to create an environment. Okay? And then a commitment to active partnerships. Right? So how does that translate into why speak? So our statement around the why is to live our commitment to youth development, healthy living, and social responsibilities. You may remember the why as spirit, mind, and body. That was our original logo. That was sort of our tagline. So today, the current interpretation of spirit, mind, and body is youth development, healthy living, and social responsibility. Okay. And we kind of see youth development, which is our intersection here, as a commitment to developing the child cognitively, social, emotionally, and physically. Think of a brick wall. You don't develop the three elements while that child is growing. That wall is lacking bricks. Somewhere in the future, as you build that wall, it will not be foundationally sound. So we are committed to making sure that any child that is in our programs or interacting with us or families that we have contact with, that we're asking the question, how are we helping to develop the child on those three fundamental areas? The key, in our opinion, to unlocking that is that child needs to feel welcome, like they belong in this program. That child needs to feel like they're in relationships with caring adults. And that child needs to go home and feel achievement every single day. What's the organic question that parents ask their child? Did you have fun today? Did you learn anything? You want to go back? Right? It's the same concept, right? This idea of unlocking those elements is what then that child now exposes him or herself to the idea of I can grow cognitively, I can grow social emotionally, and I can grow physically, right? The other thing we want to talk about is how those concepts are kind of funneled out through our programs. And we have four particular programs. One is our after-school program. So we've just acquired some space in Forest Park. We have quadrupled our capacity for after-school programming, and we've done a lot of upgrading there, so it's very nutritional programming that's going on there, and it's a very nice space for us to be doing that. We also now do camping out of that facility in Forest Park. It also quadrupled our capacity to be able to do that. And it's sort of a closed circuit. And we also have the longest school in terms of hours from 3:30 until 7 p.m. And if you just take a look at the market share, we're also the least expensive. So we address the whole access question. And I'll talk a little bit about social equity through funding and grants and availability of scholarships. And then we also have Healthy Weight in Your Child, which is a new program, which is an evidence-based program for child between the between the ages of 7 and 13 who have a 95 percentile or higher BMI percentile. That is a program that we're now administering through Loyola Hospital at Gottlieb, and we're also administering it through our campus at West Cook in Oak Park, and we're also future administering that program either through West Suburban Hospital or the FQHC, PPC, or PCC Wellness Center. This is, again, evidence-based weight management program for addressing obesity at a young age. And that sort of brings our two worlds together, healthy living and youth development. And then there's the fourth avenue, which we'll be unveiling this summer through this partnership, which is the Scholar Power Scholars Academy. We're targeting about 120 scholars this summer, and the partnership has been really great to work with, because it's amazing to see two school districts in the Y come together and talk about, oh yeah, you've got buses, yeah, we can kind of share this, and we'll bring the lunches over here, and we'll kind of add the classrooms, and don't worry about the laptops or the computers, we'll bring those, instead of the, well, you know, we don't have any resources. So this has been really exciting to look at how much is possible and how much we can do in such short time, you know, between 1.5 months gained or almost 2 months gained in math and literature or literacy in those 5 weeks, okay? We also did a comparison in terms of nutritional value of the programming per hour pricing, and we're very competitive there as well. The last thing I wanted to touch upon is our journey around social equity. So this isn't just a local Y thing. The Y movement is the largest not-for-profit in the United States. We represent 2,700 distinct sites across the United States. 85 percentile of United States citizens ultimately have had a Y experience or live near Y. We represent 21 million individual members, of which 9 million are youth. We are the largest provider of youth development programming in the United States. Okay. The exciting part is we're moving from this sort of, like I mentioned before, glorified babysitting to real, nutritional, powerful programs that are making a difference in the lives of the families and the children that we touch. But we realized early on that there's a social equity question. Okay? One Y does not look like all the Ys. And there are very specific needs. There are very acute issues facing each community that we all need to kind of think about, talk about, and find ways and solutions for those. So our particular ways of doing that is when we first arrived in 2014, we were giving out around $60,000 in scholarships. This year, we'll give out more than $190,000 in scholarships. And $100,000 of that scholarship is given specifically for youth development programming like this. We have an anonymous donor who lives in River Forest. That family has contributed $1 million commitment over the course of 10 years to make sure that no one gets turned away because you can't pay the tuition. Okay, so I want to spend a second thinking about the power of that. Imagine what a staffer feels like when a family comes in and says, I can't afford the program. And the staffer says, I'm sorry, I just can't let Johnny in. Versus, I can't afford the program, what am I gonna do? Don't worry about it, we got it covered. Here's what we're gonna do. The transformation happens in the staffer, happens in that adult, it happens in that child, it happens in the teachers that are participating in that program. The power of that participation is transformative, right? And the ability for us to be able to face the inequity question on a simple fact of that, and also looking at it from a staffing, a cultural competency perspective, and understanding through collaborations, we're going to reach the hard-to-reach families. For whatever reason, they may be hard to reach, right? So I think that, I have a cold. So I think with all of that, I think we have a very, I think, beautifully designed partnership. A lot of potential here. And it's been a joy to work with your components and your team members. It's been a joy to work with 91. And with that, I'll give it back to Ed.
Great. And I'll invite you, if you'd like, Philip, to just come forward, and you and I can sit together here, if you'd like. And I'd like to share just one or two more important details, and then we'd like to open it to Q&A. So you might be thinking to yourself, as board members or community members, what does this mean? How will this work? So some of the finer details. District 91 will have anywhere from between 20 to 40 scholars participating. The sum total of, or invited to participate, the sum total of attendees will be 120. The remainder would be allocated to Forest Park. Forest Park has agreed to offer the site, which will be at Stevenson School.
And we would be collaborating with the Forest Park administration on transportation for River Forest, 90 students participating, likely with two pickups, one at Lincoln School and one at Willard. The program lasts from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. with, thanks to the YMCA, a very generous opportunity for families who need to extend the program into the late afternoon or early evening hours at a very reduced rate. The program costs would be borne largely by the grant provided by the West Cook and YMCA of the USA, as well as costs from District 90 and District 91. Our fixed cost from District 90 at this point is expected to be on the minimum end around $12,000. That would cover our contribution for around 20 scholars. So our contribution is around $600 per child. To put in perspective, well, that's a substantial contribution, obviously. The YMCA will be covering more than that amount. And in sum total, those 20 students who will be attending this catch-up programming would cost less than just one of our students per capita tuition during the course of the school year. So we feel like it brings great value. The program is designed, as Philip mentioned, to offer explicit instruction in math and literacy. There are extended blocks in the morning for both of those programs. Math is based upon the eight principles of mathematics, which is aligned with our math program. The literacy will be based on Bell curriculum, which is Montessin Pinnell assessed, which is aligned with our program. And although she can't be here tonight, our director of curriculum and instruction has reviewed the curriculum that would be in use over the 5 weeks and given it her D90 thumbs up in terms of alignment. It's not a one-to-one match with our programming here at D90, but it would certainly be very advantageous for students who are trying to catch up. Fortunately, this is, as Philip mentioned, really a comprehensive approach, though, to student learning. It's not an intensive all-day instructional experience for these kids. In addition to the math and literacy instruction they receive, they have a communal lunch. They'll have opportunities for fitness programming, as well as enrichment. And then on Fridays, many weeks, field trips out of the area. So there are a lot of reasons that kids will be excited and enthused. There's also a community building session at the beginning of each day. District 90, we are targeting, well, both districts, this year we are targeting rising first through fifth graders. If we're able to flesh out the program fully, we will likely have a class for each grade level. It's possible that that may not work at all grade levels, or if for some reason we don't hit 120 participants. So, you know, we may have a multi-age classroom, but with the way the curriculum is set up, we feel like that could be easily facilitated. Again, I want to underscore that students would be invited to participate based upon their the kind of capacity that we feel like we have to catch them up in this type of program over the period of time that's available. In District 90, the intention would be that this program is complementary to our summer school offerings. This is not a replacement program. So we would still intend to offer our current summer school remediation and enrichment programming that's been offered in the district for many years. But for this select group of kids, where we feel like we really would have the opportunity to motivate them and move the needle, we see it as being an additional really compelling arrow in the program. So we wanted to, you know, be make ourselves available if you had specific questions. Admittedly, there are some particularly finer points that we still have to refine. Staffing, for example, the District 90, District 91, and the YMCA would all have representation in hiring staff. We would be inviting District 90 and District 91 staff to apply first in these positions, and the program will be run financially through the YMCA, which will absolve us of some of the kind of hand-tying requirements of the bargaining agreements, but we'll still offer faculty members that wish to participate a very competitive rate of pay. And of course, there is an instructional coach position that complements the classroom role, as well as a site manager. Since the program will be housed in District 91, there will be a District 91 summer school administrator who will also be on site to ensure smooth operations and the safety. Breakfast will be provided, lunch will be provided, transportation will be provided. So, please do.
Can I get a slot?
A slot. We'll have to take a look at your MTSS performance.
So for the hiring, though, it's you're not beholden to D-91 or D-90 contract language in terms of tenure. It's first. Or
because we're hiring them technically, though.
And it is possible that, you know, for whatever reason, District 90 teachers or 91 may not wish to participate, but we're all committed to having, obviously, licensed, certified Illinois teachers in those positions, so we feel confident we'll be able to obtain high quality.
I think one of the program design elements, too, for why having instructional teachers and from the districts is that they have the relationship with the children already. They understand. So it would be, I think, a heavier lift if a YMCA staffer came in there and tried to build that relationship with that child at that point. So,
what about the non-certified positions then? Do they come from Bell or?
They come from the Y. So the enrichment staff and volunteers and things of that nature would come. The association leader would come from the Y as well. And we are the interface with Bell Foundation, the school districts, and the Y.
Okay. I know that the meals are going to be provided. I wondered if you had investigated a partnership with the Oak Park River Forest Food Pantry to maybe help with some of that, because they had a program that they were very anxious to expand last year to offer lunches to kids all over town so that kids who normally have a lunch provided at school would not be hungry in the summertime, and they might be willing to partner with you and save some costs.
That actually was our license.
Okay.
That they were working out of in Forest Park. So we're actually providing that program out of our campsite.
Okay.
And it would be the very same program that we'd be providing for this particular partnership.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's all in the works.
Yeah. It's the same program. And when they were administering that, they were using our license because we were close to Grant Grade School, which is right there in Forest Park.
Okay.
You have to be a certain distance to a particular, I think it's Title I school.
When during the year will the invitations to participate go out?
It's a good question. So we would need to do, since District 90 specifically is looking at qualifying students likely based upon their MTSS status. So again, very likely students were roughly in the Tier 2 performance band. We would want to have our group planning sessions for winter behind us before we looked at those numbers. You know, if students happen to show a great deal of growth from the winter GPS to the start of the summer program, what a wonderful thing. Obviously, we would work to continue to capitalize that over the summer. But with the Faunus and Pinnell component here, it's actually really nice because that links up well with District 90. One of the ways in which District 90 monitors literacy growth over time. And so we're hoping not only, anyway, to answer your question, late winter, early spring.
Oh, did you see my eyes start to
it was really subtle. It was really subtle. But I got to add this. But once they complete the program, the cool thing about that is that we'll have data on them that will allow our teachers when the children return to school.
That's great.
We're going to create a verb, being condoned.
And it's usually accompanied by that red fish.
This is fun. For who?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Ed, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Is it fair to say, Ed, that this program is open to any student who meets the academic criteria you're describing?
It will be open to any student. Let me be sure to answer that accurately. We'll be identifying the criteria with the goal of resulting in somewhere between 20 and 40 children.
Mm-hmm.
We're not quite sure how many invitations will be extended, but you know, we want to hit the minimum and not exceed the maximum.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answers the question. So it won't be open to any student that's interested. I guess that's an
important question. Well, I mean, any student you think qualifies.
Qualifies, yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
On the basis of academic performance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the partnership allows for each school district to design this piece of it. It is technically okay once you've given the opportunity first to those kids who would most benefit, for school districts to choose to open it up. But the point of the program is first and foremost to those kids who would most benefit.
And I guess I'm looking for an answer to that question. How do you define who will benefit the most? And is it strictly an academic thing? Because the thing that I think about from the 30,000 foot level is, as we talk about this program, we talk about our issues with the equity committee and differences in achievement across different groups of students. I guess we have to be thoughtful in how we deploy a program like this. I mean, because when we talk at the equity committee level, we always say whatever additional support we bring into the classroom, it has to be available for all children, right? You can't say we're only going to offer this to this group of kids because we want to see this particular outcome, right? So when you think about achievement gap, you think about, and this is always a challenge for us, is schools that are considered high poverty schools or low resource schools are typically schools where you see gaps in achievement. Obviously, our school doesn't meet that criteria. So as we study differences in achievement across kids in our schools, there's something going on, right? So as we try to untangle it and figure it out, and then you apply a program like this, I don't want the perception to be, oh, this is a school just created for the African-American children in River Forest. Right. Like, that's what I'm trying to avoid, because I think this program is phenomenal, and I want the perception to be that it's available to any child who qualifies from an academic point of view.
That's correct.
That goes along with all of the other work we're doing from an equity point of view.
The way you stated it there is correct. There are, certainly kind of by design, there are elements of our instructional program right now that are already targeted to certain subgroups,
mm-hmm.
Or individuals.
Right.
So an example here is that very likely by design, this program will not intend to identify students that necessarily have special education needs, but it won't exclude them either.
Right.
The trick there is that we want to ensure that this would be the best program, because we will be offering concurrently in our traditional summer school program other programming that might be better suited to a child with a unique combination of needs. So
mm-hmm.
I think the goal will be for the district to put the lens on it first and foremost, that we're using criteria that will not inherently result in certain either subgroups or elemental groups having an increased likelihood of being selected on
mm-hmm.
anything other than the basis of what we think could benefit them academically. Yeah,
right.
And it will be a select band,
mm-hmm.
Because there's I think a sweet spot. I was talking about this with Dr. Cavallo, the superintendent of District 91, and while I can't speak to that specifically today, I can assure you that the principals will be a part of the decisioning of D90 principals about how we ensure that the right students get offered invitations. And our director of CNI, obviously, and Karen Fuzell, our director of special education. So that we really are targeting the right kids.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as we're doing it on that basis and
mm-hmm.
not on the basis of other criteria, again, you know, we find that happens in communications throughout the district all the time.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get the greatest value from this program, I
mm-hmm.
think, is a really important question. It's an investment from the district. We likely will not, in District 90, be extending opportunities to students where we don't see the specific academic achievement value as the primary benefit,
mm-hmm.
first and foremost. So if we invite 38 children and 24 indicate they want to attend, we will probably not then go with necessarily a second tier of kids,
mm-hmm.
unless we see that there's some type of academic benefit that comes from that, as opposed to just opening it up to another family who'd like their child to attend. Because there is a cost to it.
Right.
And of course, this is the first time out of the chute. We don't exactly know, you know, what kind of response we're going to get to the invitations. There is a sweet spot in terms of staffing.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 24-1 ratio is the, you know, most efficient. 24-2, I'm sorry, is the most efficient student-teacher ratio.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're going to target probably either 96 or 120 kids in total, but
mm-hmm.
we end up with 112. And those are all kids that would really show benefit from this Bell curriculum.
I think the other thing is that D90 has a nice host of options,
mm-hmm.
D91 currently doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So they may slightly be different in the sense that they first will start with those who would most academically benefit,
mm-hmm.
and then they may just, because it is literally an opportunity for parents to have their child enrolled in a program.
It's a great program.
So yeah. I think they may take a slightly different strategy, mm-hmm. but the design of it is to accommodate the community's needs.
Right.
That's the design of
right.
it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And you guys have a nice host of programs in the summer. So.
Well, it looks like one of the other objectives, aside from the academics, is to build children's confidence, provide
yeah.
them opportunities
yeah.
to succeed, and provide them connection,
yes.
which is very, very important to achievement. And that's a piece of achievement, but it's a very, very important piece.
Yeah.
And if you're looking just at grades, you wouldn't necessarily, or academic performance, you wouldn't necessarily see all of the need for that kind of support.
Right. And that's a part of the design of the first 30 minutes. Like, no devices, no other interaction except human interaction amongst participants as
right.
well as with the caring adults in the rooms, right? So there is a lot of intentionality from the first half hour all the way through to the end.
Yeah, I think there are many children who could benefit from that program. It's a great program.
And I think it will be highly desired
mm-hmm.
in some cases by families maybe where the children don't qualify,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the reasons why we know we're going to have some, you know,
the standards are going to have to be
yes,
carefully
some criteria
spelled out.
What is the success criteria then? Are we going to use, I mean, we go back to academics. Are we going to use the spring to fall, or fall to spring, or spring to fall maps perhaps with this population? Is there some way to gauge the effectiveness, social-emotional gains are really difficult to gauge.
Right, yeah, there's no,
quantify,
to my knowledge, and you can speak to the
social-emotional mm-hmm.
piece, there's no formal assessment measure on the social-emotional component.
Academically?
Yes.
Are we going to monitor that?
Yes, very definitely.
And then for the following year, does it look like this grant would take sustainability?
Well, it would be reduced in the subsequent year and then potentially reduced again. So, you know, we have to see at the end of this year what kind of value we feel like our students got from participation in the program.
Yeah, I think Rich's question is how would we measure that? Do I understand?
Well, so specifically the academics, yes. There are concrete assessments that will be administered for the children. So, for example, with the literacy, Fontes and Pinnell is a benchmark that we use at district currently. So we'll be able to see their initial performance upon enrollment, and then
measure growth.
Absolutely. So, but there is a intangible that I think maybe you were speaking to about, you know, the degree to which a child, having completed the program, maybe has seen greater self-efficacy, or his sense of community is built, or sense of self-confidence. And well, there won't be ways to measure that specifically. I have no doubt that our social workers, our building principals, particularly. Look at the children upon their return in the fall.
I'd also like to know their attendance rate, you know, the students over time.
Will we monitor that?
Yeah, so I will tell you what we do monitor. We monitor average daily attendance nationally over 4,600 scholars. The national attendance right now is 82 percentile. 93% of the parents reported that the scholars are more prepared for school in the fall. And 97% of parents surveyed would recommend the program to others. Out of all the scholars that have participated, you will see in math a 1.5 month sort of increase in terms of their equivalent grade, and then a 2 month average grade equivalent gain in reading. And then I believe, and I just don't have the type of measurement, so, but I do believe we do measure a sense of relationship, a sense of belonging, and a sense of achievement in each child, because all of our programs right now measure that. And we typically do that with a pre and post self-assessed, like a survey that we ask the parents and the child to participate in. So it's not as perhaps scientific as the STAR assessment, because I believe that's the assessment tool that's used for the more rigorous pieces. But there is going to be some data. I can let Dr. Condon know how we measure the social-emotional side of things.
Are you prepared for more kids?
Sorry.
Are you prepared for more kids?
Well, for this year, it's really a question of a budgetary question. Our facility can probably prepare for that, but I think it's wise to stay at 120 this first year. I think it's really good for us to test let's just call it a product for now. It's good to test it, to understand the collaboration. I mean, there's lots of cool things happening, but it's also a lot of new things happening. The collaboration between two school districts, the wide participation, the coming together, the program itself here. So I like the idea of small and steady, and then next year we could say, wow, this is great. We know exactly what we need to tweak. We feel confident we can make those tweaks. Then I think that's a separate conversation. But for now, I think it's right to be thoughtful about how expansive we are right now.
Okay. Ed, do we have figures on what kind of, I know there is loss of achievement over summer if nothing is done, and kids are just on their own all summer long. They tend to forget things. I just wondered what the attrition, what those figures normally look like for any anticipated loss of learning over the summer, because that would actually kind of make these numbers look even better, I would think.
We can certainly get that here, the average here in District 90 over the grade levels, and then share that with the Board of Ed. It's very much reflected in our NWEA MAP assessment that's administered in the spring and then again in the fall. There's a great deal of summer fall off. And it's usually recouped fairly quickly for students that experience it. Obviously, an average is going to be somewhat distorting because you have children that show virtually none who are involved in summer programming or a summer mm-hmm. reading program or something, and then others where it can be really substantial. But we'd certainly be glad to share that with the board.
That would be good.
If you could disaggregate the data down to the Tier 2 kids, that might be more meaningful.
I would think so.
Tier 2 specific.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're grateful for you coming tonight.
Thank you very much.
All right, so that brings Ms. Dio Gracias to the floor.
Well, I had a phone conversation last week with Anthony Cozy concerning the preliminary plans that are underway. Not really, I guess underway is a bad way of saying it, because I don't want to miscommunicate what's really going on. We're just preliminarily looking into the prospect of an expansion at Willard to take care of some of the space constraints that are now plaguing.
The counseling in the hallways
yes.
issues.
Yes. Yes. To take care of some of those needs and issues. Anthony is very well versed in what is going on, and I was just wondering if maybe he would be the best person to explain to the board specifically.
Sure. Okay, thank you. If you note in your packet, I have given you some updated conceptual scheme that was resulted from discussions that the district's architect had with myself and Ms. Wood from Willard School. She also spoke with some of her teacher leaders or staff leaders in her building to come up with a potential plan that would alleviate as many, if not all, of the items that we discussed at the previous board meeting in terms of the space constraints that you just mentioned. So if you go to pages 27, 28, and 29, that is a first floor, pages 27 and 28 are a first floor layout of Willard. I put the entire first floor on there to give you an idea of the areas that will be affected, either directly or indirectly by this proposed construction, as well as the northern section of the second floor where the main addition will take place if it's approved. And I'll refer you also to pages 33 through 43. These are a repeat of the photographs that were taken and presented at the last board meeting to discuss those areas that are currently in existence that need correction, we'll say. So I've highlighted the areas on this floor plan, as well as put a little number indicator in those highlighted areas. Some of them have multiple numbers, and those correspond to the pictures. So page 33 talks about the skills program that's currently in a smaller classroom, as well as to accommodate that larger program, it's in the adjacent old conference room. So the number of students that are impacted are listed on there. In order to correct that, you can see that by adding these rooms on the second floor, it doesn't directly give you a new room because of the domino effect of moving classrooms around. But as you can see, the skills program can move back to its normal classroom on the first floor southern wing, or as you see the number one in classroom number 135. That's not a room number that currently exists, it's just an architectural number. And the other area that's affected by that is in the northern section of the first floor, the sensory gross motor area, room 100. That is as a direct result of the board saying to look at more than just this second floor. That is a new room which is being constructed if we would decrease the size of the two northern first floor classrooms that exist right now. When that addition was made in 1997, those classrooms were made and they end up being about 1,140 square feet. That's much larger than the average. That's in the high 700, low 800 range. So this reduces those to 820 square foot each, and then giving you this this about 500 square foot sensory for gross motor for all the special ed department, occupational therapy, physical therapy area.
So in other words, to be clear, so that the occupational physical therapy need that we currently have will be met in an appropriately sized room.
Yes, and
if we did this,
and that will that
as
room
opposed to the current process where the kids are cramped and shifted and stuck in a conference room. Correct.
That's correct.
All right. Just being clear.
And well, and how the skills program is currently in a smaller room in the conference room, they'll move back to their normal classroom. That normal classroom will move up, and this is just a proposed plan, to the second floor, which is the other number one, and then occupational therapy and other special ed services can be used in that gross motor skill sensory room.
Sure.
On to page 34, number two, the STEM that currently is in the library, or the LLC, will be housed in one of these new classrooms that is being constructed on the second floor. Once again, getting that not only the negative impact it has on all the students that are trying to use the LLC, but the STEM instruction that's being in a smaller section of the LLC will now be in a room that's more sufficient for that that purpose.
And the library will be reclaimed for being a library.
That's correct.
As opposed to having to host this.
Yes. Activity. Page 35, number three, the inclusion preschool, the skills, and the special ed resource. A lot of their manipulatives and other equipment is housed in first floor hallway on the southern wing, or what we call the west wing, which has a lot of students impacted either directly or indirectly. With this new sensory gross motor room and the OTPT fine motor room, as well as taking the occupational physical therapy room and subdividing it into two areas, these pieces of equipment will now be removed from the hallway and put into a location that's more suitable for their use.
So the kids that need to use these manipulatives will no longer have to do it in a hallway.
And nor will they be affecting the children.
That's what we're saying.
Right. Nor,
yes.
Nor will the children that do that in the hallway be interrupting regular instruction that's going on in the adjacent classrooms.
Side benefit.
Number four, the school psychologist, which currently sits in the second floor elevator landing, will now be given a private office to conduct psychology for students in need of that type of service.
Rather than out in the open.
Rather than out in the open.
And in a glorified hallway.
That's correct.
Excellent.
Number five, the special education resource class, which was moved to what is the old computer lab in a much smaller, cramped area, which, while they've done a wonderful job thinking of creative and unique ways to make that a good instructional space, will now move back to its old space where it belongs, as you can see where it was in previous years. Thus the domino effect of why the other things that were affected. Number six, instructional technology specialist and tech support, which is now currently in the LLC entranceway, will move out of the entranceway and given its due privacy and also ability to service students in private offices or instructional areas.
Once again, we are moving classroom activity into an actual classroom.
Yes. An instructional area.
From a hallway.
That's correct.
Is that that's what we're
accurate.
Doing?
Yes.
Existing yes. Classroom activity.
Yes. If anyone can't find the numerical references, just stop me and I'll point out where these are. Number seven, the MTM to MTSS intervention aid, and this is currently on page 39 and 40, which currently houses herself either behind the first floor elevator and in the second floor hallway, along with some occupational therapy. Obviously, those areas will be serviced with instructional areas that has walls rather than under an elevator and in a hallway. Page 41, or number 8, currently the assistant principal sits in a shared room with the conference room. He will now move into a separate area, leaving that conference room to remain, but to be able to be used, since it's a larger room, as a flexible instructional space when there are no meetings going on in that conference room. So that's a double impact of those students being able to be serviced and giving the principal the flexibility to have another instructional area.
This is one of my favorites, the instructional specialist in the storage room.
Yes, so moving out of the storage room, and then this is one where this area is being manipulated if this construction goes through on the first floor where this is, but also right above it on the second floor. So we're actually cutting into some larger classrooms as well. Those that were on the larger side, not quite the 1,150 square feet, but over 900 square feet. And as you can see, there's a little bit of a piece taken out of the northern end of both of these, and then making this old storage room now the fine motor area for OTPT by knocking down a couple of walls, and then moving some storage into the entranceway further south of this area. So once again, getting this instructional specialist into another area on the second floor that's much larger than the area that currently exists and not right next to the storage facility. Lastly, number 10 on page 43, special ed aides sometimes have some interventions that they are doing in the foyer. Since that foyer will now be put up to have a storage area, this will be now moved to an area that's more private on the southern wing on the first floor. Once again, getting these students to be serviced, not in the open behind a cubicle wall in the entranceway. Well,
Anthony, out of all these proposed changes to facilities, we are adding exactly how many new programs?
No new programs.
What we are doing is finding a more rational way to meet existing need of our student base so that students who are consuming special ed services, instructional services, aren't doing it out in public in the hallway, and or we don't have professionals crammed into storage rooms. Is that correct?
That's correct. And knowing that we did just receive the results of our Regional Office of Education's life safety walkthrough, giving us some notes that some of these areas that are in hallways and in storage areas and under elevators do not meet that requirement. So it's something that we should probably consider to improve and so that we can clear those.
If it shows up on the life safety audit,
that was
maybe it's something
we're
not doing.
Is it safe to do it the way that we are doing it now?
I would say it's
to evacuate the building in an emergency.
I would say the recommendations are saying it's not optimal. I wouldn't call it unsafe.
You wouldn't call it unsafe.
But it doesn't meet some of the requirements of the amount of distance width in a hallway.
But Barb, it's enough for the ROE to say, hey, maybe y'all fix that, right?
And returning to the former configuration and getting all of this stuff that's being done in hallways into classrooms will improve the safety of the building.
Certainly. Knowing that from our last discussion of this, where there was a schematic of what we could be doing on the second floor in the north, and knowing that the board directed us to try to look as expansive as we could under the current footprint of the building. Obviously the costs are increased from what our last estimate was. But to offset a portion of that, the architect has said that the exterior elevation, as you see on the following pages, but you wouldn't be able to determine from this the way it looks. We talked about the stone cornice, and knowing for those of you who weren't here at the last meeting, this is a landmark status building, so we will have to talk with the Village of River Forest Historical Landmark Commission, wanting to keep as much of that historical integrity of the building. where we were going to continue with a stone cornice around the new second floor roof line. A brick cornice would be sufficient, in his opinion, to satisfy the historical commission. We'd have to obviously talk to them about that, but that would be much less expensive than continuing the stone cornice. Currently, the first floor has a brick cornice, and it passed the historical commission when they did it in 1997. Now, it doesn't offset all of the increases from last time, but as you can see, the total estimated cost, including all contingencies and architectural and engineering fees, is $1.75 million. Any questions at all about...
No, I don't have questions, but I think what we have to do is a better job of communicating precisely what we're thinking about doing to the community at large, so that they understand that what we're doing is rectifying a current situation that's not tenable. It's not tenable for the professionals that are charged with providing instruction to our students. It's not tenable for the students receiving that instruction. And so this is not one of those things where it's an optional, hey, let's do something new, different, or great for our kids. This is, why don't we do what we're supposed to do for our kids right now, that right now we're not doing precisely the best way. I think we need to get that message out, my opinion.
After the last meeting, I was able to stop in the Willard and get the tour from Principal Wood. Thank you very much. 5 o'clock, drive by.
5 o'clock, yeah.
She was still there. Thank you. And she took the time to bring me around, and just everything that's shown in these photos is much more clear when you walk through. So maybe that's something that, and I know your doors are always
You're
open
welcome
to other community members, but I think if they are there and they see it, and they see a sensory swing behind a wall that, you know, should really be in maybe a less restrictive area, that might make things more clear.
And Ralph, correct me if I'm wrong, I wasn't as in tune with things before I was on the board, but the renovation that happened at Lincoln a few years ago.
Same thing.
Corrected or addressed
the
same situation.
We had guidance counselors, psychologists in storage rooms, we had
hallways, I remember,
and other stuff.
Cubicles and
elevator shaft.
Elevator shaft and
right.
Hallways. So
yeah.
Kids inappropriately receiving services that should be private services in
Correct.
Public places. And we just need to not do that if we could avoid it. And so when we went about that Lincoln change, it was literally to stop engaging in practices that were not only less than optimal, really weren't very good. And we're trying to accommodate that now in the extant space that we have at Willard, and it's a challenge, right?
Correct.
And my kids went to Willard, so I'm kind of familiar. I don't need the Willard walk around. I've had the Willard walk around, so I'm really familiar with that. I'll tell you, one of the things is that we shouldn't minimize is the disruption on neighboring classes when a lot of this is going on. I mean, my kids would talk about that even. It can be loud,
mm-hmm.
and it should be loud. Actually, the children that are taking advantage of the manipulatives, et cetera, in the hallway should be having fun exploring that. That's a really important activity. However, when they're having fun, they're loud, and that penetrates into the classroom. So this really impacts virtually every child that attends more.
And I do think also, as a parent, you see it differently when you're going through there as a board member. Mm-hmm. Certainly, because, you know, your breadth of knowledge of what needs to be happening versus what is happening is a little different.
A little different.
You mentioned Lincoln, and one of the things that's been, I think, a really positive advantage, and I guess that this very much builds off Ralph's comment, is that in addition to the specific problems that were addressed there, there has been, and resolved, there has been almost a building-wide holistic benefit. Because there's I'm going to sound like an ex-principal now, but there's a flow to a building and a scheduling process and a structure and all of those things that can be facilitated when you have options. You know, hats off to Ms. Wood, just as certainly that was the case with Mr. Godfrey in the past, for working hard to use space creatively and constructively, and her staff, who have been very, very flexible and find ways to make children successful regardless. But this will have, in addition to addressing the specific problems, this will have a holistic benefit to the school and the system, and I think the operations and the management as well.
So these are sort of, remember, we've now divided our long-term facilities cost into two categories, right? The maintenance must-do kind of things, this falls into that category, versus gee, we'd like to, but can we afford it kind of things.
Right.
And you know, it's going to be a challenge walking this line. I mean, the things we have to do, we have to do, but we have to understand we're 92% local funded. Under the new evidence-based model of education funding, we will share in exactly 0.1% of the new funding that goes to public education from the state. That means we and similar districts will share in $350,000. We're going to maintain our status as 92% or more funded. Hopefully, we won't be losing money. And we did have a cycle where we were losing state money every year, but we certainly aren't going to see any increase there. We're not going to see any increase from the feds. And we are going to go negative, is it next year?
Yes. Yes.
So next year we start burning into our reserves.
Right.
So the cost of doing these needed things, and we'll discuss it more as a board, but I'm in favor of doing the things that we have to do to put Willard in a position where kids aren't receiving important services in the hallway. But that said, we then have to reevaluate sort of everything on the want list because the costs are really significant at this point. Mm-hmm.
And we've seen a larger growth in the size of the student group attending up there. I mean, the Willard Willard is taking a larger increase in student headcount than Lincoln has been, are they not?
In relative terms, that's yes. True.
Yes. Okay.
Hey, thanks, Anthony. Good presentation. Thanks, Judy. Nice job.
Thank you.
Thank you for being willing to listen.
Would it be possible to post some of these on our website, what we want to remediate, some of these photographs, et cetera, just so folks that don't have the opportunity to get the principal would walk through?
Very definitely.
Could sort of see what we're fixing and why it's sort of important to fix it.
Very definitely. What we can do is, in addition to that, maybe we could, in our upcoming primer, highlight some of the rationale behind the board considering this necessary expenditure, and then allow people to click a link so that they can see and kind of walk through some of the images themselves, maybe with a little bit more elaboration on exactly what they're looking at. Board members are more familiar probably with some of these spaces than maybe a community member might be, so we might provide a little bit more text, but absolutely that can be done.
In keeping with the timeline of wanting to move forward with this, if you choose to move forward with this going to public bid with the hopes of awarding this contract in the wintertime, either December or January at the absolute latest, I would hope that there would be further discussions at the upcoming board meeting.
Okay. I think that's right. I think we're ready for that. Judy, do you agree? Do you think we should move forward with that?
I agree. I'd be supportive of that.
What is that?
Do you think it's time to take everyone's temperature and comments about it, or would that be something that
we should do that at a board meeting. We should notice that up and let the community know we're going to specifically have that on the agenda. And so we'll notice that up for a board meeting and then invite public comment. And
I think that's
get everyone's
a good.
And we should look at the best ways to get that message out, to communicate that is what's under discussion at this point in time. And encourage people to be here, maybe even outside of our normal channels of reaching out with this kind of information.
We learned a good bit from the project that was completed at Lincoln School about how to inform constituents and bring stakeholders information in a productive way, in a proactive way. So we'd like to probably model some of what we learned from that project as well, because it's really important the community know about this. The other thing that's important to mention is that, as several board members I'm sure are already aware, all of our school buildings in District 90 are under planned development. So in addition to engaging with the Historic Preservation Commission, there will be a planned development review process that this renovation would be required. Because it will have obviously impact on the external exterior of the building, so that requires several levels and a community hearing. So we need to be very thoughtful. Yet one more thing that we'll want us that we'll ask for as much time as possible, though, kind of keep things moving forward so that those steps can be scheduled this winter. And
yes, just I know that Anthony is very aware of all of those things and has targeted just for planning purposes for this preliminary stuff, that the start date of like the day after school, and then kind of working
implies a schedule going
exactly
all the way back to
of
next
what,
week.
What needs to happen in order that
pretty
to
much
that, for
yeah
that to happen.
That's correct.
Yes. So we are definitely very aware
that really
of
helps
that
us tonight. The only thing we would be hoping to it sounds like we have a pretty good direction from the board. If there were any reasons that the board wanted us to stop moving forward, that would really be what we would be seeking this evening. It doesn't sound like we're seeking that, but we'll tee it up on the formal board meeting agenda then to garner the board's consensus about. Okay. Proceeding.
Excuse me, I'm also cutting over a cold, and there's something in there. So we're about to go to closed session. Before we go ahead, do you want to just two comments about Dr. Whitaker's talk that you just attended?
Yes, absolutely. So District 90 was fortunate to get some really, I think, positive recognition at the Illinois Association of School Administrators Conference down in Springfield last weekend. Dr. Sonia Winokur, who is one of the preeminent authorities on school culture, also an acting administrator in Harvey, Illinois, and an author, nationally known author and speaker, presented to the Illinois superintendents present, about 450 superintendents from across the state, and did a really great job addressing issues of culture in school districts and how we need to be thoughtful and intentional about addressing those things. But it was a really nice nod to District 90 that she selected two school districts here in the state that she felt were currently could serve as exemplars for how culture, and specifically the impact of culture on equity, can be addressed thoughtfully and deliberately if districts, communities, boards of education, and administrations were thoughtful about how they did that work. So it was nice to get that that recognition.
Yeah, nice for D90 to get featured in a statewide keynote to school business officials on our equity efforts.
Absolutely.
So that was a nice thing. And we will be featured in an upcoming article in, what's the periodical called?
The Illinois Association of School Business Officials Journal.
That sounds like riveting.
Anthony's a subscriber, by the way.
It's actually got great stuff in it.
Why are you laughing and he's not?
And D90 will be featured in a 3,000 word column.
That's awesome. About 3,008 words, actually.
By the time it was done. All right. So now we are going to go into a closed session according to 5 ILCS 120/2C for the placement of individual students in special education programs and other matters relating to individual students. We will not be taking any official actions after that other than adjourning. So if you want to come back and hear us adjourn, fantastic. If not, you've seen all that there is to see.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, can I get a motion to go into closed session?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.